Yeah, no, we'll give it another go this weekend. And I think more than anything, it is a great forum for our guys to get in there and talk. And we do get the Andy Whites walking into the room from other rooms. So,
well, they're really, I mean, if they could follow up on the last part of that, of course, it lasted, what, an hour, hour and a half or more.
It was longer.
The last part.
Yeah.
And if these people would go back and listen to that, because they did a terrific job, and I couldn't imitate it. Mm-hmm. You know, I ran out of things to say. That's what I do, is I have certain things to say. Mm-hmm. And but they're taking this kind of thinking. I noticed this magazine, Sample Magazine, at the Mail, it's supposed to be another sort of yuppie one, and it talked about some study had said that they were talking about income diversity was a good idea because it gave people a good feeling or something. And I thought, well, I think I'll write them a note and say, you know, I've been reading studies for over 50 years. Graduate school, professor, Capitol Hill, and all that. I have never heard a single report of any funded research that did not say that integration or desegregation or diversity was great. Mm-hmm. Without exception. Every single one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I just put a period.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is the way we think, you see. Is something true, or is it the only thing you're allowed to say? Mm. Like when we had a big problem with the CIA, when we were University of Virginia, we were the ones disputing their figures for growth of the country behind the Iron Curtain. Because, you know, they'd give out figures. About we grew Bulgaria, I think, averaged about 40% per year for 20 years.
Wow.
Everybody would quote them.
Yeah.
And that was all the stuff back then. Nowadays, you never hear any discussion of per capita income or, you know, growth, things like that, except for China. Mm-hmm. But that was the big thing. They were trying to catch up with the United States. But there was no way to measure their output. You'd go into a Russian store and you wouldn't buy a thing. Mm-hmm. I remember those countries. I remember I went into a clothing store for some reason. I've forgotten all that. But it was it made Goodwill look like a luxury store. You know, you imagine these suits. Sometimes back then we would see the Soviet reporters, and they would sometimes show up on American TV, and they wore suits that were just even I thought they were terrible. You know, but whatever, anything that came off that was a suit, and if you were Russian, that was what you got. Mm. And, you know, the party members and so forth, they had special foreign stores where they bought their stuff. I guess you wouldn't know that, but that was... Yeah, there was a special ID you needed to go to foreign stores in Moscow and so forth. Mm.
Crazy.
Because they produced... Well, I think Solzhenitsyn would talk about the cigarettes. And, of course... They had trouble getting a hold of everything. He'd get a cigarette, and all of the back would fall out of me. So he'd take it out of the pack. The back would fall out. You know, but the Soviet system doesn't recognize any of that. It's a producer economy. Mm. So, anyway, it's...
Quality production.
Huh?
Quality production.
Well, it's just production.
Yeah.
What... Karl Marx called objective labor time. Mm. And that was the only value. And therefore a diamond or water in the middle of the desert is no more important than water in the middle of the ocean. Mm. Try to plan an economy on that one. Mm. They were trying to plan the economy. They were trying to plan in transportation. And then they realized what Marx said was, you don't need transportation.
That's just insanity.
It is. Yeah. That's what people have trouble with in understanding Marxism.
Hmm.
Is that it's so goddamn ridiculous. I mean, what happened? As I say, this little smelly little man came up to Finland Station in Moscow when he said, I'm an intellectual. Give me all of it. And he said, all that economics consists of
electricity.
Soviet leadership
and
electricity.
Yeah.
It's easy. You know. And what happened was just exactly what you'd expect would happen. You know, whole thing came apart trying to find a place to start. You know, running the economy from the center.
Mm.
But it's so ridiculous that you can't explain it to people. They want it to be an intellectual mistake. You know, you had Karl Marx sitting there at the London Museum, the British Museum, the library there.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, you know, give me the whole economy and I'll run it. Nothing to it. Nobody ever says it that way. But see, it's this way of thinking that we could really use. If you're going to find, or buggers are going to find, that things just, they turn a corner and they find out a complete news flash.
Mm-hmm.
Like with communism, I remember the time, one of those old time magazines I had, they said that the Russians were producing 70% of America per capita income or some such crap as that. I mean, if you've ever seen Russia, you know, it's insane. But nobody had. You know, I prefer Warren Nutter. He went over there to Russia and he'd come back. He couldn't believe it. But the CIA and all, they had a vested interest in that. They wanted people to build up against Russia. The bigger Russia was, the more important the CIA was. And also, it's hard to tell which side the CIA was on most of the time. But what I'm trying to say is, you can't understand communism unless you can go back to the very beginning. It's absolutely, incredibly ridiculous.
Mm.
Not an intellectual difference. It's just silly. If you walk into one of those stores, all it would take would be for people to walk into one of those stores. And, you know, the middle of Harlem, you can find better stores than that.
Mm.
You know, and also, in Harlem, if the clock don't work, they want their money back.
Mm.
In Russia, the clock just didn't work, period. So what are you going to do about it?
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. It's hard to even picture, really, you know.
Well, it's, they don't picture it. I mean, anytime you went inside a communist country, you would have that long line at the door. You know, you don't know about that, do you? Back there, every communist, they'd have a long line at every store.
Mm-hmm.
People standing in line to get, and a lot of times they didn't know what was on sale, but there was something, and a lot of times there wasn't anything there. Mm-hmm. So when there was something there, they would line up for it. A lot of times they didn't know what it was, but they knew damn well it was the only chance to get it. It was, you know, and then they had the lines there and shot them if they tried to get out. But this sort of thing is so simple.
Mm.
And I hope that if you start doing this kind of thinking, you'll have a whole new look at the world.
Mm.
Like I said, the first thing I notice about diversity studies is they all come out right.
Mm.
Now, come on, everybody in every field of work suspects any study that always comes out right.
Mm.
But not in this case.
Mm.
You get this blank look from people, you know. The same rules, like, why do billionaires like socialism? Because in socialism, or this sort of bureaucratic control, whether you call it socialism or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We are sitting around trying to get some attention to this. Now, if one of us was a billionaire, we'd pick up the phone. Mm-hmm. Well, if you work things through the market, being rich is nice, but it's even nicer for a very rich person if it's run by a bureaucracy. All he has to do is pick up the phone. You know, he doesn't even have to bid on something. He just picks up the phone and runs things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, like I say, you know, millionaires are conservatives, and billionaires are liberal Democrats.
Because
anything you want.
As in pick up the phone and make the policy? Is that what you mean? Like if they're
anything you want,
they just make it happen. Yeah.
The real world is disorganized,
mm-hmm.
but once it becomes bureaucratized, it's all a matter of a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can cut through it. I know that's a little hard to catch at first, but if you can centralize power, then I'm just talking about personal power. That mm-hmm. a billionaire in a highly regulated economy can take care of things in a minute that in a free society he'd have a hard time dealing with or changing.
Yeah.
Like one of them went in there, I forgot his name, but he spent hundreds of millions in politics and he couldn't get his way. Finally he started finding people like me to pay to do it. You know, he just didn't know how. He spent all that money, he admitted he hadn't had any effect at all. You know. But all you have to do, if you've got $1 billion, you pick up the phone, you call the, you know, and they'll do it for you.
Like the, call who?
Huh?
Call who?
An expert who sells his services, and who hasn't been completely outed like me, you know. But you do it, it's a little hard to explain if you don't already have a feel for it. You know, you have a feel for how the world works. But if a billionaire wants something, he calls the mayor.
Yeah, they get like policy or something changed, or they just do it themselves.
You're talking about policy. That makes it sound a little like the conspiracies. I'm just talking about these big people want little people in the way.
Right, yeah.
So how do you get them out of the way? Call the mayor.
Yeah.
If in a free society, the freer society is, the less power you've got on that phone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, you might have some grandmama sitting out there with a shotgun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in this society, you can, anything you want, you just
do it. If you have
pick
the money,
the phone.
Yeah.
Which of course means that other people can't. But the billionaires find society, a controlled society, a hell of a lot more convenient.
Because they can control it.
Yeah, easily.
Yep.
I don't know if I'm making sense, but there was a time when you would have an awful time, just no matter how rich you were, if there was some house in the way or some farm in the way of your development, you could have a serious problem. You don't now.
No. Yep.
Call up the city councilman. They'll condemn that property. It'll be in your hands by this evening.
Yep.
That's how things actually work. Most people aren't looking for policy. You know, it's big to us.
Yeah, maybe policy not the, I don't know, the right word. But in some way, they've got to support that, you know, they've got to give support with their money to that person to be able to remove that house.
Well, the people in power in politics want more power in politics.
Yeah.
So the billionaire gives it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because all you really need is a little money.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you'd make a couple of contributions. And most of these they always talk about, did a billionaire give money to so-and-so? Of course not. He picked up the phone. He called 18
Yeah,
other billionaires now, all of a sudden a little, and then their employee, and they called up their executive vice president of so-and-so corporation. He gave $10,000.
Yeah.
They didn't have to make two phone calls. You know, they call the secretary, and they say, I want this candidate to get $1 million. And that's the last phone call he has to make.
Yeah.
He got secretaries for that kind of stuff. So no matter how much you trace the money, you're not going to do a thing. All of these laws are going to apply to the public. They're not going to apply to a billionaire.
Yeah.
But you see, that's the basic way of thinking I'm trying to get across. It really makes the world change in your eyes. Because it's hard to explain. People always make things more complicated than they are.
Yep.
You know, but what we've got is, if we can follow our own thinking, you'll just realize these things are not complicated at all. Because we can now figure things out that other people can't. Other people like that black guy who was on that program, on the Powell Talk.
Yeah.
He'll never understand a new concept. You know, Martin Luther King, when he got his doctor's degree, he was convicted, or whatever you call it, of plagiarism. He couldn't come up with a new idea. And that's just, the fact is, they don't come up with new ideas. Blacks don't. And they can't deal with them. With this guy, you know, you could tell he didn't know and he didn't care. You know, he was just talking, you know. And a new concept is something that even Orientals have trouble with, racially. Everybody does. I'm just saying, that's a real blockade when you, like a friend of mine, way 50, 60, when we were at the University of Virginia together, and I told him, I said, all of those Nobel Prizes won in the East, in the Orient, are extensions. There's nothing new in them, nothing fundamentally new. And he looked them up. He said, you know, you're right. None of them. They're all extensions. I mean, they're very complicated extensions. Not the sort of thing we could figure out. But they're still, they're all, none of them are original. That's why I think they got the wheel from us. You know, almost nobody had the wheel. Except for India. Now, India has mathematicians and so on. I think there's still some Aryan blood in there. Well, they're the only ones who have some, in the Orient, who have original research. Now, that word original is pretty extreme, because it means an original concept, which is hard to separate for us, because somebody can fill up a board with equations. We begin to lose track of which one is smarter. But the concept, you know, like gravity, or in Europe, when they came up with the windmill, they came up with the horse collar. Every single horse before that had a thing around their neck, and this more than doubled a horse's pulling power. And it was developed about in the middle of the Dark Ages. And I'd love to know why, but nobody's interested in that. They're interested in translations of Aristotle. I mean, how many times can we read? I look at these histories, it's all about Aristotle. How many times can you read Aristotle? I'd rather have a horse collar, you know, by a long shot. And then they start eating. I'd like to know when they start eating beef. You know, the Romans didn't eat beef. They used cattle for leather. And apparently they bred the in the Dark Ages, they seem to have bred the cattle so they could be eaten or something. I don't know. Yeah. I was real young then. I wasn't paying
attention. Back in the Dark Ages. Yeah. Well, this one's great. It's just saying how good the pal talk was, and how you and Linux really made it work.
Yeah, well, I want to give Linux credit. I mean, he should just take over that thing.
Yeah, definitely. He did make the comment. You know, he wanted to know if you'd participate. So maybe the first few weeks we can come here and we'll do it and then see, you know, just see what happens, and you know, if we can get it going.
Whatever you say. I mean,
yeah, I think a lot of people would love to do it with you. They want to do it with you on there.
Well,
so
if they want to, I will.
Yeah.
But a lot of times people say they want, but anyway, yeah.
So,
just as a side point, where I was somewhere wrong.
Nope, go ahead.
That the Chinese, it's always with communists, they're always talking about, well, they aren't there yet, but by God, they're coming. You know, China has about 5 times our population, and they're still trying to catch up on per capita income. Huh. Now, as one professor of mine said when they first talked about China's vast, enormous growth rate, he said, look, if you are taking arsenic on a regular basis, you're going to feel pretty rocky all the time. Then, if you stop taking half of that arsenic, you're going to improve like hell. You know, they had an economy that people were starving in. I can't get it across to people what that word means. In China, they still had people starving under communism, starving to death. And as they adopted a little bit of capitalism, they got rid of that silly-ass system to some extent. They still got a bureaucracy that would, you know, it would scare the hell out of anybody who wanted to go into business.
Mm.
And they still have maybe a fifth or a sixth of our national income, per capita income. But they sure grew.
Mm.
Like I said, if you cut back on the arsenic, you'll feel a lot better.
Mm.
And that's what happens when these countries drop. Then instead of talking about how wonderful they're doing under communism, I mean, when the Russia first opened up, people couldn't believe it. It was devastated. And but I forgot what I was going to say.
When the Russia first started opening up, they went, you know, but now they've progressed and progressed and
progressed, not
long communists.
The Russians, for instance, geothermal energy, they talk about it. There's no research on it at all. None.
Mm.
Now, the only thing you'll really run into is the Russians, back about 1980, this is what communists do. They decided to dig the deepest hole on Earth. See, to me, that's typical. You know, communists, they always, like they built their huge, well, you wouldn't know, subway, the Moscow subway, you ever heard of that?
Right.
Okay. Anyway, but they want to dig the deepest hole. It wasn't research.
Right. Just digging.
The Soviet Union has dug the deepest hole.
And then you said their drill melted. They melted their drill.
Well, that always happens. The problem is nobody's going to do anything about it.
About it, yeah.
And nobody. And now, of course, you're going to have 80 bureaucrats in there, because you might damage
something. Yeah.
The environment 5 miles down.
Yeah.
That may sound funny to you, but it's a living to these people. And for every one person, one engineer you hire, you got to hire 20 bureaucrats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's going nowhere. The only people who are using or who are doing any research in their geothermal energy are in Iceland.
Mm.
You know, and that's because they have volcanoes all around them.
Mm.
It saves them a fortune. They always talk about how to heat things in other places. Dig a hole.
Mm. Yeah. Yep.
But that would destroy all these. I mean, you know, Gore, he has made something like $400 or $500 million. He's in environmentalism. Mm. But he's made hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm. And he's helping to sponsor this world planning and all that stuff, you know. But all that would be gone if they actually went into geothermal. Mm. Everything we need is right under our feet. Mm. So, but nobody's doing it at all. There is no geothermal research at all. They're always talking about it.
Crazy.
Like I say, I see us like one of these days being so little brown, like Indians sitting around, East Indians sitting around and talking about Aristotle or, you know, whoever. Mm. You know. Mm. And sitting there in our little
loincloths,
you
know,
yeah. Diapers. And, you know, you got space with all of everything we need up there. You got under the earth, and then you've got these people sitting around listening to the Brahman.
Mm. Yep.
Already said that, haven't I? I seem to remember it.
Yeah, we were talking about it a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
But yeah, exactly. That's where we're heading, you know, becoming a brown world and all sitting around in loincloths theorizing.
Well, it's you have to have an incentive. Mm. It used to be people wanted things better. Mm. But nowadays, people don't matter what they want.
Why?
What you going to do about it? Same people are going to be elected. Nobody's afraid of you. Mm-hmm.
Nobody's afraid
back
of you.
Then you could have had a grassroots rebellion before the World War II generation, particularly. People wouldn't stand for things. Mm-hmm. But nowadays... Mm.
But isn't it still that motivation of wanting a better life, a better lifestyle, wanting...
Who?
In general, people...
If the average person says, I want a better lifestyle, we'll say, so what? Mm. What are you going to do about it?
Well, wouldn't that be the mass movement or that Eric Hoffer talks about?
Well, we'll have to start it on a much lower level. Because all these movements the ones that there's now a pattern. You do things in groups. You do things like David does and like Jim Edwards does and like Young Americans for Freedom does and National Review. And we're going to have something that starts really basic and violates all the rules. Because the rules now are against you. I mean, if you don't like a consumer product these days, well, like this this 8, what's it called, Microsoft 8?
Yeah, Windows 8, yeah.
Windows 8. And they had to raise hell, because Bill Gates, he just said, you know, hell with you. You know, I'm tired of changing things. This is the way it should be. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do about it? Yeah. Well, there's nothing we can do. Mm-hmm. They raised hell, and finally got this 8.1. But the fact is, Bill Gates had a group of people one time in an auditorium there, and he released a bunch of mosquitoes. All these people were having mosquitoes, but he said, why should just third world people get malaria?
What a moron.
Yeah, but he's a rich moron. He runs things. You see,
he's a rich moron.
He's a spoiled child.
Yeah.
He's a, you know, spoiled child pushing 50, which is the worst kind.
Yeah.
But, and if you don't like 8.0, what the hell are you going to do about it? People learn to, nowadays,
just deal with it.
The word is adjust.
Adjust, yeah, deal with it. Yeah.
Which is what slaves do. Mm-hmm. None of this is particularly complicated. Now, what I'm doing is, if we have to take them on one at a time, we'll have to do that because we have no ground to stand on.
How do you take them on one at a time?
What we're doing right now.
So first, like taking on free speech or...
Yeah, instead of having to have a ready-made organization around the exciting Jewish plot, we make complete fools of them. What they're going to do is run away. So it's going to take a lot of effort. We got to chase them down. That's what we're doing on the PAL talk here. But it's way before the World War II generation, people organized at a basic level. We don't now. There's no way to start. Somebody controls whatever it is. Well, back then, yeah, they were thugs. We were thugs too. We wouldn't put up with things, you know. But now we've been beaten into line, and only their thugs control things. And believe me, it's right back to thugs. It's like what they call the communist system. It's basically both thugs are around, and that's what we're getting here. Like they said, try to say that out in the street. They're proud of it. Well, back then, they were thugs. We were thugs too. We wouldn't put up with things, you know. But now we've been beaten into line, and only their thugs control things. And believe me, it's right back to thugs. It's like what they call the communist system. It's basically both thugs are around, and that's what we're getting here. Like they said. Try to say that out in the street. And they're proud of it. Well, they killed them in terror. You know, Lenin called it the terror. He didn't call it, social adjustment. He just killed people. Millions of them.
In a way, we have the same terror as financial terrorism today. Yeah. You know, we're terrorized into being silent.
You got to come up and do impossible things. And we're going to have to make the... If we can't beat them, we can embarrass them. And they are trying hard to find ways to crush us. No arguments. They won't stand for arguments. We're dangerous because this is somebody out of control here. Even a few little bugs are out of control like that. They really don't know how to handle them. But if you're one of the bugs, it's real hard. You know, the whole strategy is to make you feel like you're completely alone and completely ineffective. A lot of times we are alone and ineffective, but we've got to, This is the way we've got. We'll have to develop it from the ground up. All of the old opposition has been completely co-opted. So we're going to have to start off from the ground up. Nobody with an organization now has any use to us whatsoever. All groups that are organized fit into a part of the system here. We can't fit.
I guess that's how unique and exciting that PAL talk was, when all the bugs have started getting in there and speaking. Like you said in the latest article, the bugs cavalry came in, and it really was such a great experience, because it was a joint effort. Everyone getting in and talking and making simple, basic points.
Well, see, I spent all those years by myself making those points.
And knowing you got the backup.
Begging them to stop. Well, to keep it up. There's more to this. This kind of thinking, there's a lot more to it.
Yeah.
You begin to see the world entirely differently, and you begin to laugh at what you... It's like the people who went to Russia. And they're still trying to say after the Soviet collapse, Russia was in bad shape. Russia wasn't in any different shape when the Soviet government dissolved. I mean, it was the same Russia. It's just that they'd just been lying all that time here about how the Soviet Union was catching up and all that. It was a fourth world country. It was just awful. You know, but I see them trying to say, with economic catastrophe, the fall of the Soviet Union, economic catastrophe, when the USSR fell, nothing changed. I mean, they for several days there, they had a, I remember on the news here, they were talking about they had a Russian, they had a Soviet flag in Moscow, but everybody had seceded to the Soviet Union. And they kept saying, well, what country is this? Is this the USSR? Well, actually, the Russian president had taken over. You know, and they finally took down that flag. I mean, it wasn't, it, that's not a fundamental economic catastrophe. That was taking a piece of cloth down off the building. And the Russian ruble, they had before, again, good old commies, they said they used to keep the ruble above a dollar on the exchange rate. Because that's what communists do. It had to be the... But nobody. They would buy the requisite number of rubles. Then on the street, you'd buy all the rubles you needed. And when that flag came down, the ruble was worth 3 cents. Before, it was just a toy land. You know, it was just fantasy land. I mean, a dollar for a ruble? Do you understand what I'm talking about?
Currency, They just made it.
It's hilarious. They're Russia, when once they opened it up and people went in, it was just a disaster. You have the weirdest looking things over there. You have buildings with, like I told you, one of pretty well middle class. This house, they had a 45 degree slope in the living room. They just didn't use it. And the bricks on the building, I know they were, there would be a huge amount of cement. I've already said that. Huge amount of cement and a few bricks. And the fella, I was looking over at and I looked over at him and he said, they could sell the bricks. I mean, you can imagine what kind of management they had. They, you know, they built a cement building. Absolutely.
That's insane.
Some of those are just weird looking. The building with the roofs, you know, where they put on. It's just
crazy.
Hard to describe it. I've never seen anybody describe it but me.
Because
it's not popular to do that. That was a serious major power in the world. And a lot of people put their reputations on it. And I remind you that not one paid Soviet expert anywhere predicted the collapse of the Soviet Union. Now, we always worry about saying stupid things and so forth. But if you completely miss the whole story like that, nobody blames you. Then you just need another Russian expert, same people. And they all start drawing higher salaries as Russian experts. Nobody's even noticed that they didn't notice that the thing was going to collapse. When we had 9/11, I remember everybody was talking about, we got to get these people, and then they said, well, we shouldn't be in a rush to get them. And I said right here on September 11th, 2001, I said, nobody will get punished for this. Everybody was talking about, you know, the huge oversights and all these Arabs getting in here and all this stuff. And I said, no one. People thought I was crazy. I said, nobody's going to get punished. They're all going to get promoted. Because when a profession causes a catastrophe, it raises the salaries. I mean, who are you going to call in?
Right on.
If if they allow, you know, the two biggest buildings in America to be knocked down, Well, the people who allowed it to go down were the intelligence community. So what kind of experts are you going to call in to take over? Intelligence experts. And not one person was ever demoted. Maybe there's somebody who hasn't been promoted, but I can't imagine it. See, that's that basic thinking. What do people need? What what are people going to research? Well, first thing you do if you want a research grant is you figure out, what do these people want me to find? Mm-hmm. Now, honest researchers don't do that, but the ones who are successful do. What do they want me to discover? And we all know what, then, like we say with the Soviet Union, they'll find that it was really going along just great, like they said, except one day, the USSR, all these countries seceded, and the whole thing collapsed. And they believe that because they don't put it in those terms. They use words to get around it, you know. But to me, it's hilarious. You also get a lot of laughs out of this when you see people analyzing and so forth, stuff that is so obvious, you know.